This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
It's Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Corey and Mason.
Hello and welcome to Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Mason Schmidt, joined as always by my best bud, Corey Knudsen.
Buzzballs!
We have buzzballs, which is scary. I drink fast, so I'm going to be sipping like a little bitch this entire week, because otherwise I'm going to be fucked by the end of this. Also, I don't know if I should be swearing this early into the show. I know people always mention things on YouTube about, like, you gotta give it a minute before you say
fuck
words.
It.
But we're not monetized. We don't have ads really on YouTube. It's just a podcast format, so whatever. Today, we're going to be cracking into some buzzballs. Diving into what we've been watching lately, also looking at some upcoming releases and new physical media drops and all the latest buzz from the world of film. But first, Corey, how have you been? And you already introduced the drink, so let's just get to it.
It's Carson Wentz Day for the Vikings.
It is Carson Wentz
Day. It is an ultimate matchup of Carson Wentz for the Vikings, Jake Browning for the Bengals.
Just a game of backups.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm so excited to see Carson Wentz play. It has the same Sam Darnold, Josh Dobbs feel to it. It's so much fun when, like, a backup, like a well-known veteran backup is starting. Yep. It's like, that's just, there's excitement there. So we have these buzz balls. If you're not familiar with these little fuckers, they are apple-sized, and they're 15%. And this one is like an orange wine with other flavors. This is a grape flavor. It's a Vikings edition, 65th anniversary. So saw these at the store and figured, what better week to celebrate than a Carson Wentz Vikes week? We also have some other beer. We got some Prize Course Correct Citra Pale Ale. I don't think I've tried this one, actually, but it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I am only going to be working on the buzz balls just because I'm a lightweight, so I'm going to go one-to-one with the water all episode. Otherwise, I'm not going to be coherent. I'm going to be Walter Jr. by the end of this. So we're just going to try and take it as we go. I am also repping our home team Vikings. You would think, wow, he's wearing number 15. He loves Dallas Turner that much. No, you'd be wrong. My only Vikings jersey I own is a Josh Dobbs jersey, which, if you know anything about me, makes the most amount of sense for how fucked in the head I am to buy this jersey. But kind of talking about backup quarterbacks, I'm super stoked. I think Wentz and Browning might be a pretty fun matchup to watch.
Sweet.
We have it playing in the background, just muted off camera, so don't be surprised if we edit this later and cut to one of us just fucking eyes at the screen and just watching the game. But should be a good week. What we are going to jump off and start off this episode with, as opposed to looking back at the movies we've watched this past week, we thought it'd be great to kind of announce this and talk about this at the head of the episode. But sadly, this past week, we did lose a Hollywood icon passing away at the age of 89. That is Robert Redford, who I feel like a lot of people would look back at as being one of the greats of Hollywood, a champion of independent filmmaking. I didn't know how much of an effect and how much of an influence he was into establishing the Sundance Film Festival. But then, oh, well, that makes sense. Butch Cassidy, the Sundance, like, this all makes sense. But also, he's just a phenomenal actor. He, to me, the way I've always looked at Robert Redford is he was like the Brad Pitt of the 70s and 80s, before Brad Pitt. And I think a lot of Brad Pitt's career has kind of followed in line with what Robert Redford's legacy is. He passed away kind of, at least in my eyes, the best possible way to go, which is in his sleep, peacefully. Again, he reached the age of 89, so he got to live a somewhat fulfilling life and a long legacy behind him. So, Corey, how did you feel facing this news? I believe we got this on Tuesday, maybe, about the passing of Robert Redford. How did you kind of encounter this information? What role did you immediately think of?
I immediately thought of The Sting. Grew up watching The Sting so much. I love that movie. I grew up watching The Sting and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid all the time, and The Natural. So, like, those three were kind of, like, three that my dad showed me that just happened to have Robert Redford. And then just, you know, growing up and seen All the President's Men. A Bridge Too Far is a really underrated war movie, mm-hmm. I feel like. And then, you know, he won an Oscar for directing Ordinary People. And then, you know, maybe more modern audiences know him for the MCU, being in Captain America, Alexander Winter Soldier, Pierce. And yeah. Avengers Endgame. So he's really spanned a lot of different roles, and still a lot of movies of his that I want to see. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen All Is Lost. I know you enjoy that movie.
Oh, yeah. Especially looking at a man who, into his latter years of his career, still having excellence on screen. All Is Lost is a great vehicle for an actor to just be like, I'm alone on this boat. How am I going to keep this story interesting for 90 plus minutes of just this man trying to survive? And he excels at it. Also, a more recent one, I believe, was The Old Man with a Gun, or An Old Man with a Gun, that came out, I think, in like 2018, which he's in his 80s at that point, and he still is a viable leading man, and he's just always had this charisma to him, like a Brad Pitt to the more modern audiences, but he's just so likable. I'm going to use this to kind of bridge into a movie that I did look back at, or visit for the first time, just because I've heard about this film a lot, but it's a film within his filmography that I missed out on, and that is 3 Days of the Condor, which I have to my right. I picked it up this week. I immediately put an order for it on Tuesday. Once I heard about the passing of Robert Redford, I thought there's no better time than right now to kind of sit down with a movie that I haven't seen of his, because I'm a big fan of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's one of my favorite westerns. The Sting is great. Anything he did with Paul Newman's fantastic. And also, All the President's Men, that is maybe one of my favorite films about journalism ever. It's so infinitely rewatchable and so investing. But 3 Days of the Condor is directed by Sidney Pollack. He is the director of Tootsie, Jeremiah Johnson, and Out of Africa. So he did have a couple of, I think actually they collaborated maybe 6 times, Sidney Pollack and Robert Redford. This film, starring Redford and Faye Dunaway, Cliff Robertson, and Max von Sydow, is about a bookish CIA researcher in Manhattan that finds all of his coworkers dead, coming back from a lunch run, and he comes back to his office and everyone's been slayed. And he must now outwit those responsible until he figures out who he can really trust and who's after him. One of the accolades that I want to mention, that this film was nominated at the 1976 Academy Awards for Best Editing, and that shows through expertly in this film. This is a great little thriller that still holds up today, and honestly, it might be pretty... It still has some staying power, especially within today's kind of political climate and all that stuff. Robert Redford is a world-class actor. He could play the everyman, but also he's so like charming and charismatic where I'm like, fuck, I want to be like him. Like, damn, like he's an everyman, but he's better than me still. But he's infinitely likable. His character in this film is so intelligent, and he is trying to outsmart people that are 2 steps ahead of him, and he's still willingly and able to do it. He also has great on-screen chemistry with Faye Dunaway, so I'm not going to go in depth on this movie. It's a great film. I'm really happy I got to watch this past week. Robert Redford, it's going to be... I feel like every other week we talk about losing a great. This is one that kind of hit harder than I was expecting and was also taken aback by it. I was like, you don't come to expect or hear or think that you're going to hear about this news anytime soon, and then it hits you on a random Tuesday and you're like, oh, shit. I didn't think about this. Like, damn, I love Robert Redford, and I think in the coming weeks I'll likely go back and revisit a lot of his back catalog of films, specifically Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. The cliff jump scene where he's like, I'm not doing it, I can't swim. I love that scene. It's one of my favorite scenes between him and Paul Newman, so I'm really excited to kind of look back at his legacy and his films, also looking to some movies that I haven't seen of his, so... It's a sad day for film fans and the industry as this kind of Hollywood giant passes.
We say every time we mention somebody that passes away, we can live through their work and everything. I think Robert Redford especially, even just with the Sundance Film Festival every year, I mean, just promoting independent movies and that being such an important thing for him. And I think so many people would credit him for being like, wow, this festival gave me a chance to show my movie that went on to win Oscars or like got me other roles or whatever it is. So just beyond his acting, directing, just founding that film festival is such an important thing. And yeah, much like you, I'm probably going to go back and watch some movies I haven't seen of his or rewatch some that I haven't seen in a while. Cause truly one of the most important people in all of film history for sure. So moving into the new releases from this week, we had a couple movies that are very polar opposite. The first one is football themed. We talked about football at the top of this. It's Him, directed by Justin Tipping, not Jordan Peele. We put Jordan Peele movies out this week because Jordan Peele produced this movie. Producing's different than directing, but when, many people say, oh, the new Jordan Peele movie, Him, is coming out. It's not. That's okay if you don't know a lot about the difference between directing and producing. That's fine.
That and the title of producer can sprawl many different. Gave money and you just financially backed it, or you creatively were actually involved. You were never on set, or you're on set every day. Like the producing.
It can vary.
Yeah, it can vary. Directing, you are the primary maker and creator of that film.
Mm-hmm.
Producer, you're just there to kind of help support, basically.
Yes. So Justin Tipp, you want to give him his flowers. He directed this movie. But it stars Tyreek Withers as a college football quarterback who is trying to get drafted in the NFL, and he gets invited to a camp with Marlon Wayans, who is considered the GOAT. I think he has like 8 rings.
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas.
Or Isaiah White.
Isaiah White.
Isaiah White in the movie plays for the San Antonio Saviors.
Yeah.
He's got 8 titles, and Tyreek Withers wants to go train with him to get drafted by them, kind of be the successor, mm-hmm. be the GOAT. And there's not a lot of like sports movies we get as consistently anymore. This one is, sort of a sports movie in part. But what I liked about this movie, I want to start there, is the look of the movie. I like a lot of the production design. I like the cinematography. A lot of the weird imagery that they have in this movie. It is playing on some of that Jordan Peele imagery that is creepy from his movies for sure. And some things that were pretty unsettling, just them being out in this facility in the desert kind of lends to some weird, freaky things. There's like some super fans that are camping out there that just have a weird kind of look to them, weird costume design there. So I think all of that looked really good. And I think Justin Tipping did show that he is capable of directing a good movie, but this maybe wasn't, it didn't fully come together. I think Tyreek Withers and Marlon Wayans, that kind of player and mentor relationship, I thought worked in the movie. I enjoyed seeing them, and they have some nice conversations, like one in a sauna that I really like, where they're just kind of going back and forth, and then it leads into some darker, weird shit that happens. But there's good stuff overall, and it, at a base level, it plays into the theme of what you're willing to sacrifice to achieve greatness. Which we've seen in, obviously, a lot of movies. Black Swan, Whiplash, kind of most notably for me, is like, what are you willing to put aside to be the greatest in your respect?
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
To field. And I think it does that well enough in this movie. But I think where this movie falters a little bit is that it doesn't really go in depth on anything. It is pretty surface level. It is very much style over substance. Like I said, the movie looks great. It's directed well. But it just doesn't dive into those themes more. It's just kind of that base theme of what you're willing to achieve, what you're willing to sacrifice to achieve greatness. But it doesn't go beneath the surface there. Yeah. So I had a fine enough time with this movie. I like that it was unique and different. I appreciate that over a very mediocre action movie or a mediocre horror movie. I would prefer something like this, where it's giving me weird shit and lines of dialogue that are just very strange and kind of oddball. But didn't really come together for me. The ending, it just kind of lays everything out for you. It's just explaining everything that's happening. So it had like a flavor of the Jordan Peele movies, but it didn't have the substance of any of them.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend much time on this movie. I hated this movie. I don't think that there is really any redeeming quality here for me, aside from Marlon Wayans and his performance. It's really fun to be able to see him in more of an intense, serious role. And there's some bits of humor with that and his playing kind of against type that really works within this film. But this is, there was, I was so bored the entire time. There was nothing in this movie aside from Marlon Wayans that really interested me. I thought, dude, Tyreke Withers needs to get in some better work. Between this and I Know What You Did Last Summer, you are just 0 for 2 in terms of movies from 2025 that I've seen that I just immediately...
I think he's good, though. Like, he has potential.
I think he, in this film, he's fine. Like, I didn't see anything from him where I was like, well, that was bad. Like, the performances overall, I think, are okay. Marlon Wayans is definitely the standout, like I mentioned. But this is, like, title, like, textbook style over substance. Not only that, the style has no meaning. They try to explain some of it later on, but it's just weird to be weird. I do think... Although I hated this movie, I didn't really enjoy watching any of it. I do think that Justin Tipping can have a good directing career. I think visually he gave me something that was interesting, even though I didn't really love it. This movie was very dull to me. I would take kind of what you were saying, though, this kind of more interesting abstract take on a typical generic story over a haunting movie that relies on jump scares and formulaic setup and all that stuff. So I appreciate the narrative that this movie tries to take, and also I love anything with football in it, so I kind of like that little bend to the story. I love it in movies when they don't have, like, the licensing for, like, actual NFL teams, or if, like, there's a hockey movie, there's not NHL teams, or just stuff like that. And it's like, so we got the San Antonio Saviors or wherever they're from, and I'm like, okay, like, whatever. And, like, them watching, like, the Super Bowl or whatever that is in, like, one of the opening scenes, I'm like, this, okay, whatever. But I was interested. I thought the trailers were... They got me to see this movie. I don't think without those trailers I would have went and saw this. But the best thing from this movie is what you could get in the trailers just in a 2-minute compact version. And you don't have to spend the hour and a half, an hour, hour and 40 minutes maybe with this movie in theaters. I thought this movie was so dull, overstayed its welcome, poorly paced, didn't provide me with any interesting answers. There's some, like, that sauna conversation between him and Tyreke Withers and Marlon Wayans. I did enjoy that, and kind of the scare that leads into with some of the weird fans that kind of surround the facility. I'm like, that's okay, this is something.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I thought that this movie was a slog. I like I said, Marlon Wayans helped keep me in the theater, but I definitely contemplated, like, I could leave at any time I want right now. Like, I don't need to be here. I also... Not that it was predictable 100%, but I'm like, I know where this is leading to. I didn't know the ultimate decision that the characters were going to make in that kind of final, like, third act. And that was maybe a little refreshing, but I was just like, I know where we're going to end up. I just don't know what's going to be made out of that final conflict, basically. So I wouldn't recommend it. I would say it is something more interesting to watch than, like, a more formulaic haunting or horror film that you could see, kind of like a Curse of La Llorona type. I would recommend something like this instead, but I didn't like it. I didn't really have a good time. But kind of, Corey, you mentioned this. It was kind of a weird polarizing week. We had some, like, quasi big releases, but they're so different and in different genres that it was just like, I don't know which movie is going to make money, if either of these movies are going to make money at the box office. But a film that visually has been interesting to me through the trailers was A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. I didn't know if I was really going to be that invested in the story of it. Even after having seen this movie, I think a middle schooler could have wrote the spec script for this movie of just like, whoa, you go in a car ride and you get to go through all these doors that bring you through your life. I'm like, that just feels too easy. A bit unoriginal. It just, the visuals really within the trailer sold me. This film is directed by Koganada, which I think we mentioned last week comes from the director of Afro Yang, and I remember you brought up he directed an episode of The Acolyte, which I did not watch at all. But this film stars Colin Farrell, Margot Robbie in her return to acting since Barbie. I think this is the first time we get to see her on screen. Also Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who I did not know was in this movie, and then when I finally saw her on screen, I was like, that's the voice I was hearing? I did not put two and two together, and I was like, oh, okay, she was fine. Was that Kevin Kline with her too?
Yeah, that's Kevin awesome. Kline.
I was like, whoa, who's in this fucking movie? But this, like I said, it's an imaginative tale of these two strangers that go on this journey, basically set up through this car rental agency that they both stumble through, and the GPS system within this car rental agency. Did Thielen just have a big play?
No, almost a touchdown.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I just saw Corey's perspective or his attention shift to Carson Wentz dropping back behind. He just overthrew him a little bit.
Yeah, all right. A little bit.
But A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, this film felt like... It had the visual style of, like, a La La Land. It had, like, those vibrant primary red, blues, and yellows, and it had kind of that feel, at least visually. I just don't think that the story does enough to really support it. Corey, out of this and him, was there a movie this week that you were more excited to see? And also, kind of, what was some of your big takeaways from Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey?
Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, which, mouthful of a title.
BBC,
Big G. No, this one, I enjoyed more than him. But I don't think it's fully realized. I think I do like the idea. It is something common of like exploring your past, yeah, going through these doors and doing that, which I like aspects of that. I think the first like 20, 30 minutes of this movie were a little rough for me, if I'm being honest. It was kind of, it felt a little pretentious. It felt a little like the dialogue was...
Let's go!
Oh, did he throw a touchdown?
Yeah, he got a touchdown.
Oh, hell yeah.
Something our Josh offense Oliver? Hasn't been able to do for 2 weeks.
Nice! Josh Oliver, baby, let's go.
Carson Wentz
having Super Bowl, baby. We're going to the Super Bowl. We're doing it. Fuck yeah. That's tight.
With Darnold now Wentz, we got it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Maybe Darnold will win a playoff
game. We are so back.
I mean, maybe Wentz will win a playoff game.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, this is dangerous.
Yeah. This is tough. This is going to be a football and movie podcast right now. I got to watch this pass again. Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Podcast listeners, sorry. You're not going to get the...
That's so sweet.
Come on, Willie.
Anyways, Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. Back to that. I think the first like 20, 30 minutes were very okay of this movie. And then once Margot Robbie and Colin Farrell kind of get past this wedding and actually go on the journey, I think that's when it got better for me. Yeah. It was just kind of that lead up that I thought was a little bit, just some wonky dialogue in there that, like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge and, like, that whole thing in, like, this car rental agency, I just wasn't really feeling. Mm-hmm. It was just, I don't know, it was weird for me. Once we got to the actual journey of these characters exploring their past, going through their trauma, their grief and everything, it started to work for me, started to grow on me a little bit more. There's a few lines of dialogue that I like really stood out to me in this movie. There's one scene where Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie are sitting and they're like looking at the earth, kind of at this like overlook hill thing or whatever.
Is it from the lighthouse or is it when they're, they're up on that big, okay.
I know yeah. What you're talking about. Sorry. Yep. So it's a very fantastical movie. It takes a lot of, liberties with that kind of stuff. And they're just talking and they're like, imagine what their life could be like if they went to a wedding together and like they're dancing, the drinks they would get and all this kind of stuff. And I'm trying to remember the exact line that Colin Farrell had. And I wrote it down somewhere and I'm going to butcher it, but he's saying like, I'd rather be nervous with you than feel scared by myself.
Yeah.
It's something along those lines. And it kind of, I don't know, when I heard that, it reminded me of, a couple songs that I really love. One is from the Lumineers, Stubborn Love.
Oh, that's
true. Sure, you know the song. But they have a line in that song that says, it's better to feel pain than nothing at all.
Yeah.
And then I also thought of a song that I know you know well, Growing Sideways from Noah Kahan, which is my favorite of his songs.
Ever since you told me that, every time I hear it, I'm like, this is Corey's favorite song.
Yeah.
Of Noah Kahan.
Yeah. And, he has a line in that song that is kind of the polar opposite of that, where he says, it's better to die numb than to feel it all.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that dichotomy of like, would you rather not feel anything or would you rather feel everything?
And feel the worst of it.
And it's kind of like, goes back to just experiences from my life too, where it's like, you go back, like, would I rather meet this person and still, like if I could go back in time, would I still meet this person and have those memories with them and feel the hurt, or would I go back and not meet them at all to avoid the pain and the hurt that person had? So I think that the movie brought forward some of those conversations. And then the other line that I really loved was Margot Robbie talking with her mom in this movie. They're just laying in a bed.
Yep.
And
this is the part that got me.
Yeah, too. And her mom is like, just learn to live content and then enjoy the moments of happiness that come from that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a sweet moment because we're all trying to chase happiness. We're all trying to be happy and enjoy our lives. But learn to be okay with yourself and enjoy that. And then happiness will come from that. So the movie brought up some themes like that I thought worked. Not everything works in the movie. I think it kind of ends in a like, okay, I left the theater feeling good.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. It's not anything groundbreaking. It's not anything like when I walked out of La La Land, which is my favorite movie of all time. Like, just leaving me like, ooh, wow, kind of sitting with this for a while. This was like, okay, I enjoy it. Mm. Some good lines of dialogue, some dialogue that I thought was a little bit pretentious, if I'm being honest, and didn't really work for me.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Very mixed bag for me, but overall, I did enjoy it. Not one that I can, like, fully recommend. Mm-hmm. And I think the trailers kind of market it as more of a typical romantic movie, maybe, where it is a little bit more fantastical. It's a little bit more thought-provoking at times. It's not like you're anyone but you, or is that what the Sydney Sweeney one
is anyone called? But you.
Anyone but you. It's not like a movie like that. It's not like a rom-com. It's not that at all. So know what you're getting into if you're going into the movie. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some strong elements to it for sure.
Yeah, I kind of agree that the beginning of this movie, before they really even get to the wedding, I was like, this is kind of jarring. Like, just because the world that they're establishing, there's not a lot of kind of reasoning set up to support why this world is the way this is, or why this car rental agency is the way it is. But it kind of, to me, it worked overall just because it made me feel like the Truman Show, just kind of like establishing something weird out there, a little bit different than like our day-to-day normal life. And I there's a point where I'm like, you know what, I just have to get on board with this and just see where it takes me. Overall, I think you liked him a little bit more than me. I think I like this movie a little bit more than you, but a lot of the strengths that you highlighted are the same strengths for me. There are some scenes that really spoke to me, and I think that this is a film being built off of like these characters and self-reflecting on their pasts, and a lot of times, if you're relating, if you're an audience member, you're going to relate to that and think back during the movie, damn, what if I did this different? And think about different aspects of your life. You're like, wow, I remember this, and I think that they touch on things like Colin Farrell in high school when he was in theater. And I'm like, well, I was in theater. I can remember some of these kind of anxieties surrounded that, or like telling a girl that you love her just to basically be completely shut off from and turned down and stuff like that. It's just, there's relatable things that I found really touching and emotionally poignant and resonant with me. There are also things that I'm like, this is when the movie wants me to feel sad. Like, this movie's not subtle. Really? There are some moments in exchanges between, like you mentioned, Margot Robbie and her mom that really fucking sung for me. Like, my favorite part of the movie was Margot Robbie going back and being able to be in her house with her mom and getting home and her mom's asleep on the couch, turning, like, going, waking her mom up, and her mom just like, like, the amount of times I've woken my mother up, and I don't know why, moms are just always
terrified.
Like, tightly wound, but you wake them up from a nap, like, someone's intruded. Like, I remember waking my mom up, like, on the couch, like, hey, mom, mom, wait. And I'm like, oh my god, shit, fuck, stop doing that. So there's things that, like, spoke to me in this film that made me think back to my own life and made me think about my mom, especially in that same scene when they're laying in bed about the whole, hey, strive to be content, and then happiness will come with that. Mm-hmm. But the part where, in that same scene, Margot Robbie, this entire time, because through her mother's eyes, she sees her daughter, her 12-year-old daughter, but Margot Robbie is in her place. And Margot Robbie's like, can we stop playing pretend? Can you just, like, tuck me in? And I was just like, I know I'm supposed to feel sad, but fuck, that's hitting me a little bit. Like, so there are aspects that this film really lines up with what they're setting out to do and what it worked for me. Overall, I think the performances are really good. The world that they establish, I like that they don't try to explain a lot of it. At first, it was kind of grating to me. I'm like, what are we doing here? Where are we going? And I think that the story sets it up to be kind of, while it tries to have this big inventive way to self-reflect and look back on your lives, it does follow kind of a repetitive formula, and the pacing of it can kind of slow a little bit. But I think the chemistry between Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie was great. Mm-hmm. Visually, I thought this film was very fun to watch. I like kind of this outlandish, very bright, vibrant colors. It does kind of end in like a cliche, like tight, like wrapped with a bow and like really pretty ending. I'm like, okay, like it works. I get it. Overall, I did like it. It didn't work 100% for me. Sometimes, like you, it felt like the movie was trying to get me to feel a certain way when I wasn't naturally going that way. And this movie's not subtle. It's bold. It's very bold and kind of brazen about some things. But I would say like 80% of this film really worked for me and I really dug it. 20%, I was just like, it's fine. Like, I didn't hate really anything in this movie. There is some clunky dialogue too. I saw this movie alone and I'm like, I kind of want to bring my wife to it. I think she would get a lot of us and would like this movie a bit more, just because, especially when we don't really get a lot of like romance movies, at least in theaters, a whole lot anymore. And this movie feels the most like a romantic, just a straight up, not even rom-com, but like a romance drama. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm kind of happy to have this film in theaters. I would like to hopefully take my wife to it or wait for it to come out on streaming and watch it again with her. This is a movie that I'd be willing to watch again outside of its mm-hmm. initial theatrical run, which I can't say the same about for him. But big fan.
Yeah, I could see myself watching again and maybe liking it more, just kind of knowing what to expect.
Or even showing this to my mother. I think she would really like this, and I think that experience could be really great, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week I caught up on a couple of movies that were released earlier this year. The first one was Death of a Unicorn, which I know you saw earlier this year in theaters.
Yep.
And this movie is about a father, played by Paul Rudd, and a daughter, played by Jenna Ortega. They're going out to this kind of wilderness retreat. Paul Rudd is trying to become a proxy for this rich guy, played by Richard E. Grant, and his whole family. Richard E. Grant is married to Taya Leone. They have a son, Will Poulter, who is the best part of this movie. I fucking loved him.
Easily.
Yeah, he's incredible. So it's basically this small group of people at a kind of out in the woods at this cabin. And on the way there, Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega hit a unicorn with their car. And they're trying to figure out what to do with it. And they, you know, havoc ensues and becomes a little bit of a monster movie. And pretty fun. I like this movie. I think it's really enjoyable. I'm okay that I didn't see it in theaters. It's one that I'm like, yeah, this is a fine, like, it's on HBO Max right now. Like, just kind of catching up. Like, cool, I'm glad I saw it now. I think the best parts of this movie, Will Poulter, I thought was fucking hilarious. He just is this like stuck up little rich kid that can just do whatever he wants
and gets away with it.
And he can just have these little hobbies of like archery and like he has this big printer that he uses. He's like, yeah, I had a little thing with that and I don't really do that anymore. Just all these little like rich kid things that he gets to do I thought were great. He also just the unicorn is dead and they're like testing it. And then he just starts like snorting the shavings off the unicorn horn and has these visions. Just fucking hilarious. And just his lines are incredible. So I love like what Will Poulter has done in the last few years with his career. I think he's just awesome. And overall, I think it's just a really enjoyable kind of monster movie. Again, like sort of like him, it doesn't go that deep with anything. No. And it's not even really meant to. You know, Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega, the father-daughter relationship is pretty stereotypical of like, they don't really connect in the movie and then a tragic thing happens and then they kind of connect by the end of it. Mm. You've seen that before. It's nothing too crazy. What I will say, the visual effects in this movie are not good.
No.
They are very bad. Like, surprisingly bad. Like, it's an A24 movie and they normally have like at least interesting visual effects, I feel like. This movie was like early 2000s bad with the unicorns and I think it could have benefited from the Jaws treatment of not showing it as much.
Less is more.
Maybe. Yeah, and like there's a lot of scenes during the daylight too with these things where it's like, oh, I'm really seeing the bad VFX
here.
Yeah,
I can see the seams. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of my main issue along with just not going super deep. It's, you know, not much to like dive into, but I enjoyed the cast a lot just in a contained location, monster movie. A lot of the humor worked for me, mostly from Will Poulter, so a fine movie. If you want to check it out on HBO Max, I think it's definitely worthy. It's a pretty quick watch, too, so I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm happy you checked this one out. It's not going to make like a top 10 or top 20 list, honestly, even for this year, but it was just like a good time. It's a good little monster flick. Will Poulter, it's in the trailers, but when they're like, it cures cancer, and he's like, that's the biggest one. Just his reaction is just really funny to me. Anthony Carrigan's also really great in this movie. I think him and Will Poulter kind of steal the show. Which is weird to say that when it's a movie led by Paul Rudd. I'm like, oh, really? All right, I dig this. But this movie, I think it's a good, somewhat maybe forgettable time. I can't remember like a lot of I can remember the back half of the movie. A lot of the setup, I'm like, it's kind of foggy to me. I saw it back in, April or whenever this movie came out. I will say like you mentioned, the effects aren't the best, but I think that there is at least a little bit more substance to this film, at least in terms of like having some sort of a satirical look on like the healthcare system, and I'm like, and how they could exploit things to their benefit with this unicorn bringing all these different medicinal properties that could cure things, and they're like, all right, well, we'll save it for the elite, basically. I'm like, all right, well, that's like something interesting at least, but. Yeah, I remember I sat through this entire movie with someone's like full 32-ounce Coca-Cola soaking in my fucking hair, because as the movie started, this dude behind me and my wife shifted in his seat, knocked his pop, and just drenched us both. And then we moved two seats down and then watched the entire movie just like dripping with like sugary syrupy soda. So I was just like, you know what? All right, this movie will forever be in my memory because of that viewing experience. So I'm happy you saw it. I'm guessing you watched it on Max, so hopefully you're not all sticky sitting at home watching it on Max. But
can't
also,
say that.
You live alone, so you're sticky. Yeah, I don't know.
I'll never tell.
I'll never tell. I'd had kind of like a big day this past weekend. Actually, on Friday, I believe. My wife is out of town, so I've had just free range to do whatever the fuck I want, which is, for me, is not like the most exciting thing. I just watch a bunch of movies. So Friday evening, right after work, I went and saw Splitsville, which I'm going to talk about here, and then after that I went to A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, and then late at night I saw Him. So I saw three movies in one day, and I will say the quality of the films started at such a high and slowly petered out throughout the evening. But Splitsville, directed by Michelangelo Covino, who directed a film called The Climb, which also co-stars Kyle Marvin, who's also in this film. This film we mentioned, I think it was in limited release for a while. It's still showing at the main cinema near us, so I'm like, all right, I want to check this out. I need a good comedy, because this is one of those few movies where it's like, hey, we have this comedy in theaters. I'm like, that doesn't happen often. This film, is, like I said, directed by Michelangelo Covino. It stars him and Kyle Marvin, Adria Ajorna, and Dakota Johnson. This film is such a refreshing watch to have, especially in the theaters, because it is a comedy. But it's also maybe the most consistent, like, laugh-out-loud comedy for me this year, more so than Naked Gun, and I honestly can't think of many more comedies aside from Naked Gun that really have worked for me this year. This film, watching it, made me think back to when I was like 13, 14 years old and I saw the film Crazy Stupid Love for the first time. Just a good, like, somewhat romance, but like mostly a comedy film about relationships, and now we get that in 2025 with Splitsville, with characters that are so likable.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Well, they're doing detestable, horrible things at times, but they're always so laughable and fun and likable. The main synopsis is when Ashley asks for a divorce, the good-natured Carrie, who's played by Kyle Marvin and is the scene stealer of this entire movie, and he's potentially our protagonist if you wanted to frame it like that, but the good-natured Carrie runs to his friends Julie and Paul for support. Their secret to happiness is an open marriage. That is, until Carrie crosses the line and throws all their relationships into chaos. This is a movie where all these characters are trying to sleep with each other to solve the issues that they're dealing with, and fuck it, it works. It's so funny. A movie about, like, I'm a married man. Watching a movie about an open marriage, I'm like, I have no idea or no concept as to how that would work, nor do I understand this world, or nor do I necessarily agree with it. But fuck it, this movie is awesome, and it handles it so well. And earlier this year, we had a Dakota Johnson film vehicle with Materialists that came out, and I was really excited for that movie, and I was excited to see Dakota Johnson in it, because I've kind of grown to really get excited for some of her roles. I think as an actress, or as a person, she's somewhat funny, at least in interviews. Hasn't always, like, completely carried over to her film work. And I was let down by The Materialists. And not only that, I was let down by Dakota Johnson in that film. I didn't think she was that great. In this movie, she exceeds. She excels. This is a movie designed for her to do really well in. And she's phenomenal in this. Between her and Kyle Marvin, I was so sold on this movie. And this is a movie just about, it's like I said, it's about relationships. But it's about people just trying their best, trying to figure things out. Relationships can be messy, and this film really just holds a magnifying glass to that. And they're like, look at all these horrible details about what's going on here and here, and this person slept with this person, and that wasn't okay because they're best friends with this person. I'm like, all right, whatever, it works. This film also, for being just kind of a, not necessarily a straightforward comedy, but a mid to low budget comedy in theaters, it's shot so well. And some of the blocking within scenes, which is something I don't typically look for or analyze really in comedies, is handled so well. There's kind of this wonder that happens in this movie I was blown away by. I was like, whoa, they're really showing the...
Pick six? Pick six, baby!
Yeah, sorry, podcast. Sorry. I just stopped talking because the Vikings made a big-ass play.
Hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah, we're so back.
Oh, yeah.
This is a film that I wouldn't necessarily look at the staging, the blocking, the camera work in a comedy and be like, oh, wow, this is exquisite. But this, I was like, holy shit, this wonder is really taking into full, like, representation of a relationship from beginning to end or from gestation to kind of complacency. And it works so well. So this is maybe one of the biggest surprises of the year. I don't know if it's going to be in my top 10. It kind of is towing the line between like 9, 10 spot and like the 11, 12 area. It's kind of dancing with like the long walk in that area. But I really dug this movie. I think it's such a breath of fresh air. It's a great comedy. If it's still showing in theaters near you, go support it because it's definitely worth your time and worth your money. It flies by. It's a great watch. And it made me feel good. And it was a funny movie. So it was a great time that I had at theaters. Corey, this is the movie, I think, of 2025 that I have seen that you haven't, that I'm going to be like, this is the one you should try and venture out to because it's definitely worth it.
This is one that's been on my list. I've heard so many good things about it just from so many critics and everything. So definitely curious about that one. Another sort of comedy, very interesting comedy that, again, I was catching up on some stuff this week on HBO Max.
Oh, and Paul Rudd comedy.
Yeah, Paul Rudd heavy week for me. I watched Friendship, which is directed by Andrew DeYoung, stars Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd, along with Kate Mara and Jack Dylan Grazer. And essentially, Tim Robinson plays a suburban dad that falls for his neighbor, played by Paul Rudd, and it's really trying to become friends with him, and it does kind of have some themes of male friendship and male loneliness and all that kind of stuff. And I am very mixed on Tim Robinson. For his show, I Think You Should Leave, I haven't seen it in its entirety. I've seen a lot of the clips. I think everybody has seen the, you know, the drive-thru thing.
55 burgers, 55 fries,
yeah. Or like the zipline thing on like the Bachelor show. Like,
that's the best one.
There's some stuff of Tim Robinson that I absolutely love that I think is hilarious. And then other stuff I'm very mixed on. So kind of half and half. And that's how I feel with this movie. I felt like I was going to love this movie and really like it. And I ended up thinking it was okay. I don't know. Tim Robinson, I think, has a lot of funny moments, and it is, I don't know if it's like a dry humor or like how you would categorize it, really.
Absurdist humor.
Yeah, absurdist humor. It's an interesting kind of subgenre of humor, but a lot of this movie kind of fell into Tim Robinson just screaming and yelling, which was funny like the first time, and then he kept doing it and just screamed all the time, and then I was like, okay, that's not, like, comedy. That's just you being loud, which isn't funny to me, really. Yeah. It's just, like do some jokes and, like, have good writing. I don't know. There is funny stuff in this movie, for sure. I chuckled, you know, a few times, and I enjoyed seeing the relationship, and it is, like, a very cringy comedy, for sure. Like, you're just kind of, like, don't do that.
Don't say that to him.
Right? It's being weird. Like, don't put soap in your mouth right now. That's weird. That's strange.
He breaks the sliding glass door.
Yeah, like, some stuff that works, some that doesn't, and it's, I don't know, this is one that I feel like I need to sit with for a bit more, maybe even give a rewatch, because I think I could like it more, but I don't know, I very mixed on it. I think it's worth a watch. If you like I Think You Should Leave, you'll probably like this movie too, because it is that same style of humor. But it's just, it didn't completely work for me, and I'm not completely on the Tim Robinson train like a lot of people are. I feel like that's maybe a hot take. I think he's okay. I think he can be funny, but isn't always funny. So, it's on HBO, much like Death of a Unicorn. check that movie out. Check both of these out because I think they're both interesting watches. I know you saw it. I think you probably enjoy it more than I do.
Yeah, I think, and also, like, it is a very weird comedy, but it's not, like, the most consistently funny throughout. There are some bits that I remember having a good laugh with, especially the scene where he trips balls. He licks, like, a frog,
mm-hmm.
and then he just goes to Subway in his, like, in his little hallucination, and I'm like, that's funny. It's just, like, good absurdist humor at times. It is very much like a style of comedy that if it doesn't work for you, you're kind of in for a long watch. If you like what, like you said, I Think You Should Leave, or his show that he has with Sam Richardson, which I've watched a tiny bit of, called Detroiters on Netflix. Pretty funny, but it's a lot of that same humor. And sometimes it does boil down to just Tim Robinson yelling, which I think he has a very funny yell. There are some actors that when they yell, I think it's hilarious. Like Steve Carell. Anytime Steve Carell yells, I'm dying laughing. It's an oddball version of I Love You Man, kind of. And it weirdly gets really serious at times. Also, the story surrounding these two characters of Tim Robinson kind of going through a divorce and also trying to connect with his son, I'm like, the story here doesn't set this up to be a comedy, which sometimes can work really well. But in this film, I'm like, it's kind of distracting from what I was hoping to get out of this movie, which is kind of consistent laughs, a good time, good chemistry between Paul Rudd and Tim Robinson, which is there. But it kind of dives into a bit of a weirder kind of take on it, which I can kind of appreciate just because, yeah, it's not always, like, friendship is weird. It's not always the cleanest cut thing. You're not always laughing all the time. Sometimes you're breaking through their sliding glass door or breaking into their house and you find certain things in their desk and shit like that. So it's just like, it is an odd movie. It's hard to recommend to a lot of people, but I think if you go in with that expectation, you might set yourself up for a good time.
Mm-hmm.
This past week was also a pretty big TV week, as it has been for the past number of weeks, because we've had Peacemaker and Alien Earth kind of coming out congruently. Peacemaker, we did get Season 2, Episode 5 this past week, which does kind of build off of that Episode 4, and it gets us better into where the rest of the season is going to go, but it's also the 5th episode of an 8-episode season or an 8-episode arc. And it's like, okay, now we're really getting into the main conflict here, I feel like. While I did really enjoy this episode, I think my biggest takeaway or biggest complaint, which is something we've kind of already highlighted throughout this watch of this second season, is their inability to really set a concrete path of what's going on. It felt very kind of like happenstance, things are just happening to our characters, but it never felt like we had a clear narrative of where we were going. Everyone kind of has their own thing. Harcourt's maybe on a revenge path, and same with Frank Grillo's Rick Flagg Sr. After Christopher for killing Rick Flagg Jr. Also, we have this parallel dimension type thing, and this eagle hunter guy played by Michael Rooker. Okay, we have that going, and Danelle Brooks is trying to make a security business happen, and Economos is along for the ride, and Vigilante is also there saying tarantula facts, or whatever the fuck you want, manta ray facts, whatever he wants to talk about. So this season, while I still really like the show, I've had a great time watching it. It's made me laugh a good deal, and I get excited week to week. It's now feeling like we're finding our footing in the 5th episode. My biggest complaint is that these episodes have been pretty short, too. I think this week and last week's episode were right around, like, 35 minutes, and I'm like, honestly, drag it out to an hour. Get us to some of these story elements, story beats a little bit sooner. Establish the main conflict. Why Christopher Smith is like, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to this other universe, which I feel like they've kind of already built up earlier, and now we're just kind of retreading and getting back to that point. So, overall, I'm a big fan of the show still, but I feel like a rewrite could have really saved a lot of the structure of this season, at least for me. Corey, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, the big thing for me is, like, we talked about it last week, is that every episode this season, pretty much, has been Argus going after Chris.
Yeah.
This is another one. Like, it's 5 episodes in a row of, all right, we got to get a team together, we got to find him, we got to get to him before this. I'm like, we have done this so many times.
Yeah, I'm like, Argus, you guys suck. It's 5 episodes. He's still getting away.
And this episode needed to happen last episode.
Yeah.
To end the first half of the season with, again, spoiler alerts for, I think we say it every week, but just in case you haven't seen it, like, with Chris going to that dimension and being like, I want to live here. Like, this is so much better And then, you know, the other 11th Street kids being like, yeah, we need to go find him. I like that idea a lot, but that needed to happen earlier in the season because we have three episodes left. And I know they've hyped up these last three episodes of being like very, like, you know, the scripts are very tight and locked down. Nobody can see them.
A lot of potential cameos and characters being introduced.
Yeah, all
maybe.
That kind of stuff. But it's just like, man, we needed to get here earlier. Like, this is the plot of the season, and it's coming at the end of episode 5.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
I'm not even, like, it's going to be coming in 6, 7, and 8. So that's bothered me. Also, I haven't laughed that much this season.
Yeah.
I just, like, Vigilante saying animal facts is not funny.
It's the same jokes a lot from the first season still.
It's not, like, I can't tell you a joke from this season. Like, there's so many from season 1 that I can remember and be like, that's fucking hilarious. And, like, the plot of season 1 started in that first episode. They established the end of Suicide Squad, how it goes into the show, and then the butterflies established that in the first episode, one episode of a show. And this one, it's taken 5 to do all of that. With all that being said, I do enjoy the show still. Like, I feel like I'm being a bit more negative on it, but I enjoy watching it. One thing that did really get me was Vigilante crying at the end of the episode when Peacemaker like goes through the door and makes the choice to go to this dimension, shut it off so they can't find him, and like Vigilante just crying that he left is like, oh, that's really sweet. Like, just a friend being upset that his other buddy left. But beyond that, I'm just like, man, I'm still kind of waiting for this to like really kick in. Yeah. I think it could in the last three episodes, but if 2/3 of the show is like kind of meh, that ultimately is going to affect how I feel about the season as a whole. One good thing about the episode is, I mean, with every James Gunn project, I get exposed to music that I haven't heard before.
Oh, yeah.
The song that plays during the end credits of this, Take Me for a Ride by Bad City, I've been listening to that song all week. I don't know if James Gunn is just making shows and movies at this point to flex his Spotify playlist and just be like, I need to put these in somewhere.
He's like, I need someone else to tell me I'm good at this.
Yeah. So that's a positive for sure. I do like the show still. I'm very excited to see where it goes. I think we are finally kicking in now after 5 episodes, but it has been a little bit frustrating up until this point.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree with... And I think, like, for me, 5 episodes in, granted, I don't know what these last 3 episodes are going to hold, but at this point, where I'm at, over halfway through this second season, scratch Tim Meadows, scratch Michael Rooker, take those characters completely out of the episodes as well as their plot lines. Johnny Konamos can lead a lot of the Argus shit, and we can leave that at that. Don't need Eagly having a conflict. He's not a character in and of itself for me. Eagly is great when he works with Christopher Smith, with Peacemaker. So keep that dynamic going. Scratch those two subsidiary characters and combine episodes 4 and 5. They're both roughly 30 to 35 minutes. Cut out some of these side plots. Make one contained full hour of television where we get the final conflict of Chris is in this parallel dimension and we need to get him back, but we don't know how. Boom. Mm-hmm. All right, end episode 4 there and then present us with 4 full episodes of what's going on and resolving this conflict. I think that shapes up a lot better. It just feels like, especially with some of the comedy, it's James Gunn comedy, which a lot of times works for me really well, but it just keeps going. It just doesn't have like a clean cut to it. And like, also, I don't fucking need Judo Master in any of this shit.
No, I hate Judo Master.
Judo Master in the first season, I'm like, you're fine. Judo Master still somehow being around, I don't need that character. I'm not interested in that character. I don't think any of the lines that character has is funny. I don't need another fucking shot of this kid eating hot Cheetos. It's not funny. It doesn't work. I don't see how they keep trying to make this character relevant. Judo Master is a complete waste of time and derails the story, takes away from the plot. Just give us the characters that we've grown to love. Give us this 11th Street Gang or whatever the hell they're fucking called, and give us the conflict. It shouldn't take 5 episodes of a show to establish the conflict. I'm going to talk about a show that came out in the 90s that I started watching this past week. Yesterday, I watched the full first season of. In the pilot, they establish all of the main conflicts so well. I don't get how we're this far... Again, this is a show I like. I don't get how we're this far into it, though, and we don't have a great through line, and we have all these subsidiary characters and conversations that don't really fucking matter. I do like some of the nods to the bigger DCU, but a lot of times, like, oh, Michael Rooker's dead? Why was he ever a part of this show? Why was he in this? So I have a lot of frustrations with it just because it is something that I hold near and dear to my heart, and I think it could be great, and right now it's just giving me good... And I'm like, I don't think it's like a big step to get you to that next level. I just think you're making weird mistakes that you could easily, upon a rewrite, restructuring of this second season, you could iron out and fix pretty easily.
It's so weird to have a show I'm so excited for every week. Also just so frustrating. Yeah. But in that same vein, the show that I'm not as excited for every week, but is better every week, is Alien Earth. This week we got the 7th episode, which is the penultimate one, and again, it's really good. I like this show a lot. I think it's really cool. This one we get, the scientist, I forget his name, but he had the facehugger on him in the last episode, and then the kids are trying to bring him out to the beach to, get him to Moro and to Yutani and everything, and that's a great thing about alien projects, whether it's a movie or a show. Is anytime somebody gets a facehugger on them, and then the facehugger comes off, and you're just waiting for the chestburster to come out, it's just like, you're just on edge the whole time. So like,
how much time has this guy got?
They're like walking on the beach, and he's like, no, I'm feeling alright. Like, guys, we can go back to the facility. It's fine. It'll all be good. You're like, when's it gonna happen here?
See what happened to you.
When's it gonna happen? And he's like, kind of remembering things. He's like, a little foggy the last couple days. So that, like, that's just a inherent nature of the Alien franchise being building up tension really good.
That, and not to cut you off, but the thing that will always be funny to me because of you and something that you've said is anytime in the Alien franchise they focus on the facehugger and they're gonna try and get a facehugger off of someone's face, the tail, just cinches around the neck. They're like, okay, try me. Like, actually, I'm gonna get tighter on.
There's also a part in this episode where, one of the kids is trying to, like, feed water into the scientist's mouth as, like, the facehugger is on him. And the, like, claws of the fucking arms are just like, no, stop it.
Stop doing this.
Like, I'm doing something. So,
hey, fuck off.
Come on, I'm trying to get an egg in this dude right now. Stop it.
Oh. What a bad sentence.
Pause on that. Hold up.
I'm trying to get an egg in this dude.
But, you know what? It's still good. I don't know 100% how I feel about Wendy, the main character played by Sydney Chandler. Her being able to communicate with the Xenomorphs, kind of like iffy on. I'm like, I don't know, this feels like something that franchises try and do when it's going on for a long time. Like Jurassic World did it a lot with Chris Pratt being like, well, we need to communicate with the raptors. The fucking hands thing. The fucking...
Blue!
Stay back.
Blue!
All 3 Jurassic World movies with Chris Pratt did that. And this one...
I get that.
It's not, like, as bad, but it's just... It's like, well, what if we did something different? Which I appreciate, and it is, like, this hybrid thing, so it is a little bit different, too. But it's like, a Xenomorph is just a fucking killer, man. Like, it's trying to survive. It's like...
It's an animal.
I don't know if I'm 100% on board with that. But I am excited to see next week's episode. It's the last of the season. I think it's been consistently really good, consistently better than Peacemaker. I like it a lot and am very curious to see what next week holds.
This isn't my favorite episode of the season, but still being like one of like maybe like my 4th or 5th favorite episode, it's still exceptional. And I like, again, what this show does with kind of bringing this franchise into new directions and introducing the Neverland kids, basically. I really do dig this. And I actually really have come to enjoy that aspect of Wendy being able to communicate with the Xenomorphs. I do think that there is a kind of a breaking point to where I'm like, all right, now it's gone too far. So that's still kind of reserved to be seen for me. I think that this episode was maybe the more kind of generic of this season, but in doing so, it's like it falls more in line with some of the alien stuff of like, we just, there's a xenomorph, this is our conflict, this thing trying to kill us and we're trying to get out of it. This is the episode that feels somewhat the most different from the rest of the season for me, but I still really did enjoy it. And I don't know where this show is going to end in its first season, and I find that really exciting. So I'm really stoked for next week, and or this upcoming week, I should say, and episode 8. And while I wouldn't say Peacemaker has been worse than Alien Earth, some weeks I like Peacemaker more, some weeks I like Alien Earth, I think Alien Earth has shaped up better overall in its story arc and its narrative to where I'm like really confident in this finale that we have to look forward to, whereas Peacemaker, I'm like, you guys got a lot of work to iron out, you got shit to figure out right now. But I'm excited for both shows. Alien Earth, again, it coming out on Tuesday and being able to get that ahead of Peacemaker, sometimes that's a benefit just because I'm like, all right, awesome, fantastic. You're good. You stay right there. Mm-hmm. Now let's look at this guy. But I'm excited nonetheless for both shows this upcoming week. I did mention I started a rewatch. My wife's out of town, a show that has been on my mind for the past couple of weeks just because I'm on a little bit of a David Lynch kick, is Twin Peaks. Came out in the 90s. Started with the first season of 8 episodes, really tightly made, and then we had a... There's a car just
everyone's honking outside.
Living in Minneapolis, there's either just someone laying on the horn, someone cutting across traffic, or someone rear-ending you at a stop sign, which happened to me on Thursday. But we won't get into that. Twin Peaks, first 8 episodes in that first season. Then the second season, we got, I think it's 22 episodes, so I have that to stare down. I finished the first 8 episodes, which is all of season 1. Just yesterday. This is a show created by Mark Frost and David Lynch. David Lynch has directed a number of episodes within this show, starring Kyle MacLachlan and Michael Antke, I believe. Kyle MacLachlan plays maybe one of my new favorite characters in all of film or television, as Special Agent Dale Cooper. An idiosyncratic FBI agent investigates the murder of a young woman in an even more idiosyncratic town of Twin Peaks. Kyle MacLachlan as Agent Dale Cooper just is a man that loves black coffee and cherry pie, and he wants to solve a mystery, and he's good at it because he finds details and stuff. This is a good detective story, and it's set in a world where the town that this mystery is taking place is as interesting, if not more interesting, than the actual mystery. This is a show that plays with a lot of David Lynch tropes. You get kind of like that surreal imagery in at times, and you get a lot of good detective work, good dialogue, weird humor, also some horror elements. I was really surprised at how often I was laughing during the first season of the show. I'm really excited to continue on watching the show. I initially started watching this because I am more of a movie guy, and David Lynch directed the film, which is a prequel to the series called Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, which is about Laura Palmer, the murder victim, her last day on Earth. I'm really excited to watch.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Watch that movie, but in order to watch that movie, I need to get through these first two seasons, which this first season, 8 episodes, the pilot is an hour and a half long. It's a mini movie, and it's exceptional. It is one of my favorite pilots, favorite episodes of television I've ever seen. I think it's the best episode of the season. But every episode within the season is so fun to watch just because the vibe of it, the setting is so good. This little Twin Peaks town, this is such a great show to watch, especially around this time of year of getting into fall and kind of September, October. But I am so sold on this show. This season also wraps up on a massive cliffhanger, but being as that it's 2025 and I'm not watching the show as it's releasing, I can just go right into the second season and see how that gets resolved. But I'm really excited to continue on with the show and then watch the movie after season two, as well as they did a little return season in, I think, 2017 called Twin Peaks The Return. I'm excited to watch all of this. I'm going to work through all of the show. Hopefully in the month or two, I had to get a Paramount Plus subscription, so I'm going to try and act fast and get through this stuff just so I don't have to get it re-upped for a second month. So hopefully by the end of this month or mid-October, I'll be able to report back to you on my complete viewing and watch through of Twin Peaks, as this is a show that I've been excited to watch for a while, and it's really just killing it for me. I'm a big fan of this, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
I have not seen Twin Peaks. Been on my list for a long time. Would you say that it's more accessible than a lot of David Lynch's other stuff?
Very much so. It's not as surreal and like out there and weird in his typical like nightmare-esque way of like what you'd see in Eraserhead or even like a Mulholland Drive. This is more of a kind of a straight-up detective story of just this FBI agent comes to a small town, and the small town is weird. This show at times feels like it has elements of Coen Brothers to me. So I'm like, this is very accessible if you're a David Lynch fan, but you're like, you know what, Eraserhead doesn't do it for me. It's way out there. I like Elephant Man because that's more of a straight-up story, but this is a good entry point. Granted, I'm only 8 episodes in. I know from clips I've seen and other shit that I've seen, just kind of as being a fan of film and TV, you hear about Twin Peaks. I already know who killed Laura Palmer, even though we don't find that out until midway through season 2. I already know who did it just by being a fan of David Lynch. But I'm still along for the ride. I think it's good. I think it is a little bit more accessible than a lot of his more out there stuff. So overall, it does really work for me. And I think, I know that some of his stuff has, at least Eraserhead from memory, didn't really work for you as much as it does for me. I think this would be a show you would enjoy. I think you would get into this.
When you were just kind of talking about the plot of the show, it reminded me of something I watched. I think it came out in like 2015 or 16 maybe. It was a show called Wayward Pines. Do you ever remember that show?
No, but I heard about it. I remember hearing
about it. Yeah, M. Night Shyamalan was involved in that, and Matt Dillon was like this Secret Service agent that goes to this weird town to like try and find these couple agents, and it just kind of reminded me of that. But yeah, Twin Peaks is something I definitely want to watch. I know I will watch it at some point along with the movie and the return show and everything, so glad that you finally started it. I'll probably, after hearing... Anytime I hear you talk about something that you like, I'm like, I need to watch that. So
it makes it mandatory viewing. Yep. Like, fucking need to talk for to sure. about it. So I'll be watching that through. I'll probably start season 2, honestly, after the Vikings game later on. So who knows? Maybe by the end of... I won't be able to watch 22 episodes of a show before next week, but I'll be able to at least give you an update on what I'm thinking of season 2. Another show that I did start this past week, I'm not going to spend too much time on it, just because I got through, I think, the first 3 episodes of it, and I wasn't even that excited to watch it. My wife just really wants to watch it, just, again, because it's this time of year. And we watched the first season. We did sit down and start watching Wednesday season 2. This show... And I felt this way about the first season. I thought, if this movie or this show came out when I was in middle school, I would have really loved it. But it feels like it's made for a viewing audience younger than me. This feels like a show that if ABC Family was still pumping out like Pretty Little Liars, this would be the show that would come out at like 9 p.m. Like this, it just feels too like family friendly and doesn't have a whole lot of bite to it, but it is still enjoyable, and it does satisfy a lot of like the fall spooky isms and the need for that. Also, you have Tim Burton, and it's a really good cast. Luis Guzman is exceptional as Gomez, and as this reinterpretation of the Addams Family and looking more at Wednesday. So honestly, even more so than Jenna Ortega, he steals the show for me so far. I don't have big opinions on it. It's kind of just fine for me. I will say, of the shows I'm watching, I'm never excited to sit down and my wife's like, let's watch Wednesday. And I'm like, okay, like, I need to check this off the list just to satisfy you, and then I'll watch Twin Peaks when you go to bed. Like, fine. But I'm watching Wednesday. I might finish it by the end of next week. Who fucking knows? I'm not terribly excited about it, but I'll give you a pretty concise report on my middling review of it, as I anticipated being.
So this, you said you watched the first 3 episodes of season 2?
First 3 episodes, so we haven't even gotten to, because the release of this was, they did the first 4 and then the
I was
going to
say,
four.
Yeah, okay.
We were hoping, I was hoping to get through the first 4, and then we just didn't watch that last episode of that initial, like, part 1 of Wednesday season 2. So I'm sure that there's going to be a cliffhanger at some point. The mystery of this season isn't really that interesting to me. I don't know. I didn't need a season 2 to this. If it was a one-off show, I would have really dug it. It was fine for what it was, but now I'm like, all right, you're kind of getting long in the tooth already for me. So season 2, hopefully I'll wrap it up by the end of next week, and I'll be able to talk to you guys about it next week too.
Coming up this week for new releases in theaters, one I'm very excited about and has continued to grow with just excitement.
All the hype around it.
One battle after another, the new PTA movie, Paul Thomas Anderson, who I like. Again, I think I kind of have a love-hate relationship. I love There Will Be Blood. I love Boogie Nights. And then there's some movies I don't love. Punch Drunk Love, Licorice Pizza, I'm The Master. Phantom Thread are all like, okay, they're fine. There's good elements to them. Don't love them. But I've heard One Battle After Another is incredible from people that have seen it. It's really rising up in the Oscar kind of, you know, best picture, director, all the categories are kind of getting hyped up for this movie. So essentially the plot is that when their evil enemy resurfaces after 16 years, a group of ex-revolutionaries reunite to rescue one of their own's daughters. So Leonardo DiCaprio stars in this movie. Anything that he's in these days, he picks his projects very wisely. He's not just hopping in anything. I'm there for it. Sean Penn, Benicio Del Toro, Regina Hall, Teyana Taylor are in this movie as well. I can't wait for it. The trailers have really worked for me. The like music choices and sound design in the trailer are just really fun, too.
The Kendrick. Oh.
And just everything is like feels like it's coming together in this movie. And this feels like a Paul Thomas Anderson movie that I could really love. And I'm so excited to see this one. This is kind of that first, like, all right, we're getting into Oscar stuff. I think, like, Smashing Machine is the week after. So it's, like, kind of getting into that, like, weekly thing of, all right, these are contenders in a lot of categories. And I am pumped. Leo is just must-watch. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the best actors of our generation. I mean, we talked about Robert Redford earlier, and you kind of mentioned Brad Pitt. Like, Brad Pitt and Leo are kind of in that same realm of, like, movie stars from the 2000s to now that are just like they're legends at this point. Anything they do is must watch. So I am so excited for this movie.
Yeah, this is the most excited I've ever been for a Paul Thomas Anderson movie in my life. And kind of similar to you, I don't love all of his movies, but it's always, we've talked about this a lot, it's an appreciate or admire more than I actually like it. My favorite of his movies is Punch Drunk Love. I also, obviously everyone loves There Will Be Blood. That movie is fantastic. So I know that this man is an auteur. He puts out great work. Even if I'm not the biggest fan of the movies personally, I can recognize that they're well made and well shot and everything works. This movie, the trailers haven't always been great, but after just seeing them so regularly, whenever I go to screening or a movie, I feel like there's always a One Battle After Another trailer that pops up, and I'm always like, I always get excited. Also, to see Leonardo DiCaprio finally pair up with Paul Thomas Anderson, something we haven't seen yet. Leo's working with all the big directors, and now he ventures out to PTA, so I can't fucking wait. Also, I'm so, just by the snippets we've gotten in the trailers, the chemistry between Leonardo DiCaprio and Benicio Del Toro, I'm so excited to see that.
Viva la Revolution!
And then the door shuts and the rug flaps back. Oh, perfect. My God. It's like, I think that this movie, it's a long fucking movie. It's like 250, I think. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited to just go to the theaters and watch a hopefully fantastic movie. A lot of the reviews that have come out have been like, this is the best movie of 2025. Maybe the best movie of the decade. I'm like, holy shit, high acclaim. So I'm hoping I at least really enjoy it. I'm hoping that this kind of adds to that PTA list of the movies I actually really do love of his, as opposed to like, yeah, I recognize it's good, but it didn't really hit with me. But this is easily one of the movies I'm most excited for this fall, and I can't wait to see it this week. A movie that I wish was never coming out, and I'm surprised that it is coming out, also coming out from a wild director, a director that when he was in more of like his prime, he was making movies that I was at least interested in. Now he's just way overstaying his welcome. But we have Strangers Chapter 2 coming out. This is not the second Strangers movie, as we've had, what, this is maybe the fourth or fifth at this?
Fourth, yeah.
Because we had Strangers, Strangers Pray at Night, Strangers Chapter 1, and now Strangers Chapter 2. That seems like in the complete fucking wrong order. TJ Hawkinson for a good catch downfield.
Yeah, right. That was nice. Yeah, those are hanging in.
Yeah, Vikes are up 14. Hell yeah. 14 up against the Bengals. So fuck you, Jake Browning. Last time we played you, you really burned us in the fourth quarter, which it is still the first half. So who knows what remains to be seen. But Strangers Chapter 2 is directed by Rennie Harlan. If you fucking think you remember that name, you might have from the 80s because he made Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger, Cutthroat Island, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, I believe. And then also he touched base on Strangers Chapter 1, which I didn't see Strangers Chapter 1. Corey, I know this is a franchise that you at least have nostalgia with and you watched a lot with your family growing up. Mm-hmm. You saw Strangers Chapter 1.
I did.
Should I be excited for this movie?
No. So, yeah, just a quick little recap. Back in the day, my family, there was a point when we lived in a house kind of out in the woods that was a little bit sketchy.
A little bit more secluded.
A little bit more secluded. And my two older brothers, me, who was too young to watch it, and then my mom.
That first one is terrifying.
Watched the original Strangers movie. And, like, when I think of movies that just, like, I don't know, like, growing up, that is a movie for me. And just, like, our family watching that, my mom being terrified. She still references that movie.
Yeah.
And we saw, my mom and I saw The Strangers Chapter 1 together last year. So it's kind of like a fun memory, even though the movie's not really that good. It was just kind of fun to be like, hey, remember that movie we watched like when we were kids and scared the shit out of us?
That fucked me up.
And we're like, oh, we're looking outside of our windows and looking in the woods being like, they could be out there right now. I don't know. Yeah. But that first movie, the original Strangers.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
It is very good. I think it's a solid thriller, and just the line of, like, I don't know, we're doing it because we can.
Yeah.
Like, that's terrifying. Like, yeah, you were home. Like, it's very scary. Strangers Prey at Night, not a very good sequel. Some cool visuals in there. But Strangers Chapter 1, not that memorable. I don't think that this movie's going to be that good. I probably will see it just to complete my Strangers watch through of things, as I like to do. Maybe I'll go see it with my mom. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know that I'll have a review for it next week, but maybe...
That might be the best way to redeem this movie for what I'm anticipating it to be, because
exactly.
The trailers have made this look like the most formulaic bullshit.
Just generic, like, whatever. Like,
unscary. Like, that first movie is phenomenal. The original Strangers is maybe the top movie I can't watch with my wife, because my wife likes horror films, but if it is a movie about a person doing bad things, just like a grounded setup or a person just setting out to do bad things to someone else, something that could happen in the real world, she can't stomach it. So The Strangers is a movie she will never rewatch. And it's a movie I really like, but I have not ventured into the sequels that have and the prequel that have spawned from Strangers, and nor do I think from the sounds of their quality am I really eager to venture out. So I won't be seeing this one this week, unless I'm really just missing a horror movie, but we have a lot of horror movies coming out in October that I'm really getting stoked for, especially Black Phone 2. I keep seeing that trailer, and I'm like, I didn't think I wanted a sequel to this, but now I love the direction you're going. So there are other horror movies that will kind of satiate my hunger for horror later on this year or later on this season that I'm more excited for, but this one looks like trash.
That's the thing, is like getting into this season, it motivates me to see this a bit more. Just I'm like, I'm kind of hungry for a horror movie, and especially if I see it with my mom or something, that could be a fun day. The other movie coming out this week, which I know Mason is just stoked for,
I put the show notes together first, which is a rarity. Usually Corey gets to it first, and I left this one off, and then I come back and he put it on. So I'm like, why are we talking about this?
You know, I want to include everything that's coming out because I don't know who watches. I want to cover the big things
out. If there's someone young enough that's excited for this movie, that should not be listening to me talk about boners weekly.
Well,
and, like, swearing nonstop. Like, I found out my grandma listened to an episode of this, petrified. Absolutely terrified. She shouldn't hear the shit that I say on this.
Well, we've got Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie, coming out. I think, there's a Netflix show or something. I don't know, a show somewhere, or maybe there was movies before. I'm not really sure. Anyways, I'm going to read the synopsis and,
we'll move on.
We'll see. Yeah. So Gabby and Grandma Gigi's road trip takes an unexpected turn when Gabby's prized dollhouse ends up with eccentric cat lady Vera. Gabby embarks on an adventure to reunite the Gabby cats and retrieve her beloved dollhouse before it's too late. Layla Lockhart Craner is the lead of the movie. I think she plays Gabby, maybe. I don't know. Kristen Wiig is also in the movie. Tara Strong shows up.
She's the villain, I think, of this movie.
Kristen Wiig. I've seen the trailer like once or twice,
I've
maybe.
I've seen it once, and that was too many times.
You know what? I don't want to exclude anything. I know this is getting a wide release. So if you're excited for the movie, if you have kids that are excited for the movie, this could be a watch for you, opposed to the other kind of heavier movies from the week.
That's true.
Movies are for everybody.
Good counter-programming here.
Exactly, yeah. So this could be something. I don't know how well it will do. I don't know if there's a big Gabby's Dollhouse fandom. You never know with these things. Sometimes movies pop off and do really well. But, again, another interesting release week. You got kind of a heavy Oscar drama, got a horror movie, got a family movie. So lots of options for you at the theater this week.
That's something I feel like I've noticed more and more doing this show, but specifically 2025, I feel like a lot of movies when they're released, we have really good counter programming. Mm-hmm. We have a horror and we have a comedy and we have a family. Like we have a good balance of what you can for options in theaters. Not that I think this past weekend with Big Bold Beautiful Journey and him are going to do gangbusters, nor do I think this upcoming weekend. I know what one battle after another is coming from Warner Brothers. And there's a lot of talk surrounding, will this be the seventh film from Warner Brothers in a row to break 40 million box office wise in its opening weekend? I don't think so either. Yeah. I think they're tracking like maybe 25 to 30 million. And I'm like, yeah, 32 would be probably the ceiling for it. So I'm hopeful for all these movies to do well just because I want the theater business to thrive. The picks for this week, outside of one battle after another, I don't know what the fuck I would go see. So it's kind of nice going into a week where I'm like, there's one movie I need to go see, as opposed to last week where I'm like, I need to do some cleanup work. I almost saw, Twinless? That is not Logan Lerman.
Dylan O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien. Yep. I confuse them all the time. So I'm like, all right, there's a lot of movies I need to see and catch up on. So I had a big watch week this week. Might be a little bit lighter. Maybe I'll get more Twin Peaks on my screen this upcoming week. But in terms of physical media roundup, in terms of what we purchased lately, I already brought it up earlier. I did buy the Kino Lorber 4K Blu-ray of 3 Days of the Condor, that Robert Redford film from the 70s. It is a really great watch. I got to watch it last night and I had a great time with it. Max von Sydow is awesome in everything. He's never turned in a bad performance, and he's a great kind of quasi-villain or antagonist in this film, so I really did enjoy that movie. I also, only because I saw it, I had no anticipation or expectation that I was going to pre-order this steelbook, but I pre-ordered the Blu-ray 4K of F1. That steelbook is mint. It is sexy. It has the coloring I wanted it to have, it had. Like, I wasn't anticipating buying a steelbook for this movie, and then I saw it, and I was like, yep, okay. I can't wait to rewatch that movie. It is a movie that I've really loved from this past summer, and the score is, like, every once in a while, like, I don't want to buy every single movie I've seen just because I don't have the space to house all that. But with a movie like F1, where it's a little formulaic at times, but it's such a great summer movie, I'm looking for an element that's really going to sell why I need this movie in my collection. And the reason for buying this movie specifically was Hans Zimmer's score. Mm-hmm. Just the opening of that slow zoom in on the racetrack, and you have the score kicking in, and you have Brad Pitt round. I'm like, yeah, I need to own that. So I'm so excited for when that steelbook gets here. I have no idea when the fuck it's releasing, but I can't wait to add that to my collection.
That movie has sat really well with me.
Oh my god, yes.
I think we talked about it when we reviewed it in its opening week, but it is just like a throwback, like 80s, like...
Yeah, Days of Thunder, Top Gun.
This isn't like the deepest movie, but it's just this is a crowd-pleasing movie. The scene when he's just like flying at the end. Not flying, but like when he's just like, everything goes silent, and he's just like, I'm just the only person here right now.
And just that is stuck with the track. The music during that scene too is
incredible.
So phenomenal.
So yeah, I love F1. We have a big release week coming up this Tuesday, the 23rd.
Mithrigan 2.0. Yeah.
Mithrigan 2.0 is coming out. We have a lot of 4Ks. We have some Blu-rays, some steelbooks. The big one is Superman 2025 coming out. The steelbook is really nice. It's the Fortress of Solitude, and then the 4K, just the regular one, has a lenticular slipcover, which is really cool. I wish it had a Blu-ray with it. It sucks. I hate...
Do the combo pack. Do both.
I hate it. Like, Warner Brothers does that where it's like a 4K in digital and then a Blu-ray in digital. I wish it did both, but I might be tempted to get that lenticular one. Just, I'm a sucker for lenticular. Yeah. If you don't know what that is, also, that's what you like. I don't know. Like,
let me get on my soapbox here.
Some people don't know, I guess. Like, we collect things a lot.
It's a term I never knew until I met you, and I was like, all right, this is going to be my best friend.
Yeah, like, it's like when you have the thing that, like, you have it one way, and you turn it, and it flips the image, and you kind of move it back and forth.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. It's like Clark Kent and then Superman. So it's really cool. I'm excited for that. And then 28 Years Later, that's coming out. You got a cool 4K steelbook for that one as well. You mentioned Mithrigan 2.0, also a 4K steelbook for that.
I've debated on that, even though I didn't really like that movie a whole lot. I'm like, it's kind of a decent
steelbook. If I know Black Friday's not as big as it was for movies, but like if that were to be on sale at like Walmart or something this year, even though I don't like that movie.
I wonder if they will do a Black Friday, because they did like kind of a, from memory last year, it's sort of, like they're still phasing it out, and I'm like, well, now it's kind of completely phased out at this point, aside from like maybe Walmart and Barnes & Noble, so I'm like, what would there be?
Well, even like Target last year had one stand. It was like maybe 10 to 15 movies that they had. I hope they do that still. Yeah, I don't know if they will. A couple other movies. One that I'm actually very curious about is The Home, which stars Pete Davidson. It was a horror movie from earlier this year. I've heard some pretty good things, actually. Like, okay. It was pretty solid, so I'm curious about that. 40 Acres, we talked about. We saw it at the AMC Screen Unseen earlier this year. The Last of Us Season 2 has a nice 4K steelbook coming out. And then some older releases coming out. We have Night of the Living Dead on 4K, The Sound of Music on 4K, Flow, fuck that movie. It's coming out on Criterion. That fucking last year's Oscars can just fucking die. I hate that shit. Flow sucks. Tell me that that's better than The Wild Robot. Fuck off.
I saw not even like dog last year's Oscars, but I saw a thing from I think it was the 2015 Oscars of just like the animation that they had during the announcement of the Best Picture award. And they like Birdman and Selma and all these movies. And I was like, holy fuck, 2015 was a gangbusters year. And it's like, I can't say the same about some of the more recent years. Especially
who's talking about Anora? Who's still talking about that movie?
Well, also, like, it's hard because, like, I feel like you and I are the only persons within our, like, friend group that are going to actively talk about that movie. And
even
we're
just,
also
like, at
like,
work or,
fans
like,
of it.
I don't know. I just don't feel it. Anyways, I've gone on my Oscars rant from last year, whatever. I don't need to scream again.
Flow should not have won Best Animated
Feature. No, The Wild Robot's so much better. Inside Out 2 is so much better.
Animation-wise, like, sure, it's cool that this one person did this, and it's very independent.
He's a weird guy. You're a weird fucking cat dude.
I'm not going to make judgments
about
it.
You're a weird fucking dude.
I'm just going to say that the animation is cool, but the movie around it isn't good enough to support what is the best animated feature film. Anyways, this
fucking
is a rant that we will continually have.
Whatever. Anyways, the other thing coming out this week, we have Corpse Bride on 4K, Airplane 2, the sequel on 4K, and then the Sean Connery movies, the Sean Connery Bond movies are coming out on 4K. I think they had like a steelbook thing maybe like a couple weeks ago or months ago. Now they're just coming out on like singular 4K, which is pretty cool. I'm assuming they'll do that for the Roger Moores and all the other Bond movies at some point. I could see them doing that. Moving into some movie news for the week, we had a couple trailers that came out. One I was really excited for, which is Anaconda. Saw this on the release schedule all year, and I'm like, we haven't gotten any information about this. We don't know what this is. I haven't seen the original Anaconda movie from 1997, so I'm excited to watch that.
That is a masterpiece that like regularly aired on the Sci-Fi Channel growing up. I've seen that movie too many times. It's awesome. It's so bad, but it's awesome.
I'm so excited to watch it. And just hearing about this reboot, remake, whatever they were doing, I was like, I don't know, do we need this? Or whatever. The trailer comes out on early this week, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that. And it stars Jack Black and Paul Rudd.
Great cast.
And directed by Tom Gormican, who did The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Love that movie.
Incredible movie. Another very long title. But the concept is that Jack Black and Paul Rudd are part of this friend group that want to remake the movie Anaconda. Mm-hmm. And they go out into the wilderness, and they actually encounter a big snake, and the plot of Anaconda happens. Minnesota legend Steve Zahn is also in the movie.
My barber used to cut his hair, and he fucking loves telling me about when he used to cut Steve Zahn's hair. He's like, you know Steve Zahn? I'm like, you've told me, Greg, about this guy 15 times. I know.
Yeah. So we love Steve Zahn. Bad Ape. And Daddy Daycare? He was in that,
he's
I think.
In Sahara with
McConaughey. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good movie. So I'm actually excited for this movie. It kind of reminds me of Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Where it is like that movie, it's the actors from the original Nightmare on Elm Street get caught up in the actual plot of Nightmare on Elm Street, which is, I love New Nightmare. I think that movie's so good and very underrated in that franchise. And this is kind of that same thing where it's like addressing that this movie exists in the real world, but then it actually happens and we go on this fun adventure. And I think that's a perfect way to do this, because if you just did a remake of Anaconda, it's like, okay. Even though I haven't seen it, it's just like, it's okay, whatever, like, sure. But I think this is a really fun route, and I think just Jack Black and Paul Rudd being the two stars is like, yeah, that's perfect. That is a lot of fun. The other trailer I just want to mention quickly from this week is The Housemaid, which is coming from Paul Feig. A very interesting director, especially in the past few years with, like, A Simple Favor, both of those movies. Last Christmas, I actually kind of enjoy.
I didn't see that.
That's
one,
a pretty fun,
is
like...
Is that the one with,
it's Amelia Clark.
Amelia Clark. I was
Henry Golding.
Sarah Connor from Genesis.
That's right. Genesis, yeah. pretty good movie. And obviously, Paul Feig did a lot of comedies and you know, directed a lot of stuff back in the day. But this stars Sydney Sweeney. She takes a job working as a maid for a wealthy couple played by Amanda Seyfried and Brandon Sklenar. and some dark secrets come about. So good cast, could be fun, could be, has a sort of like Simple Favor feel to it, like just in that setup where it could be interesting and kind of some twists and turns. So both movies I'm actually excited for. Both of them are coming out later this year, both in December, so very curious about both.
I was really pleasantly surprised by Anaconda, because I remember them talking about them doing a remake, reboot, revamp of this franchise, which is like you, I'm like, we don't need that, no one needs that. But I love that they're taking like the Tropic Thunder approach to making an Anaconda reboot. I'm also, I don't know if they outline, I'm guessing they're not, but when I heard about the trailer before watching it, I was like, so are Jack Black and Paul Rudd playing themselves in it? Which I'm so happy that they're not. Yeah. I'm happy that it's just like these two buddies that love the original film. They're like, we're gonna go make it. We're gonna go do it again. And then shit hits the fan. I think the premise and the setup of this film, I'm so sold on, and it looks just like a good fun time at the theater. So I'm excited for that movie. Quickly, it has skyrocketed to some of my highest anticipated for the rest of this year. Now, also, I'm really interested in it coming out in December. Specifically, I'm like, really around like the holiday season. That's
where could be a sleeper Christmas hit.
It could make a good chunk of money, especially because I can't think of many comedies that are really on the slate for that month. So that I'm excited about. The Housemaid is obviously an adaptation of the book by Freddie McFadden, which is, she's a famous mystery thriller novelist. So I've heard good things about the book series. So I know that there's, I think, some sequels in there as well. I like the cast. I think Paul Feig, some of my favorite work Paul Feig has done when he's not doing full-fledged comedy. I really did. I didn't see another Simple Favor just because you kind of warned me to stay away from. But the original, the first Simple Favor, I love that movie. I think it's such a fun thriller. And Paul Feig, he hasn't like really missed that hard with me. I love Bridesmaids. Spy is so underrated.
So good.
So funny. One of the best performances Jason Statham has ever given.
Oh, yeah.
I really don't mind, is it the Heat, I think, with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy? Yeah, it's a pretty decent comedy, too. So I'm excited enough to go see a Paul Feig movie, but also this cast. I like Brandon Sklenar. Maybe he'll get announced as the DCU Batman. I keep seeing people fucking chattering about that. That'd be kind of cool. I like the cast. I'm intrigued enough by the story. It's a book that my wife has read, so I'm sure we'll be seeing both of these movies. Whether my wife goes to Anaconda with me or not, I feel like that's a movie to go see with Corey, because I think that could be a good time, a couple beers in hand.
Yeah, no, your sister saw the Anaconda a couple weeks ago, so.
That's a fucking sentence that you have.
Yeah, you like that?
We went back and forth tit for tat last night, just sending Snapchats to each other of like, oh yeah, your sister, I found one of our high school friends' crooked-ass teeth in your sister's ass hair and shit like that. Just saying god-awful things that don't need to be aired out to anyone watching this or listening to this, but fucking said it. So, and any other news, which we're going to try and... at least my as I take forever to explain what my goal is... my goal is to rip through the rest of these movie news because I want to watch the Vikings game. But we got a first look at Ryan Gosling in Star Wars Starfighter, which I don't know why the movie doesn't come out until 2027. But director Sean Levy shared a behind-the-scenes photo of Ryan Gosling and co-star Flynn Grey from the set of Starfighter, which is being shot currently on the Mediterranean Sea. The Disney film is set 5 years after The Rise of Skywalker and is slated for a May 28 release in 2027. So we got a long fucking time until we get to actually see this movie come to fruition. But it was at least something kind of new in terms of the realm of Skywalker, in terms of the realm of Star Wars, of being able to see a more grounded look. He looks like a pirate. Like, this could be a Cutthroat Island sequel to me, at least based on this first image release from Sean Levy. It's just him on a boat, and, like, I like the look of it. It looks something... I mean, we're judging a lot off of one image, but it looks different from what I would anticipate from a first look or second look image from Star Wars Starfighter. So I'm intrigued by it, but I don't necessarily need this one photo to rock my world for 2 years. Like, I don't get why we're getting it now, but I'm excited.
It's we haven't had a lot of like water-based Star Wars stuff, yeah. So it could be interesting depending on what that scene actually is. We got some news that Joseph Kaczynski's Miami Vice movie is coming out in August of 2027. Joseph Kaczynski obviously did F1 and Top Gun Maverick, along with a lot of other good stuff. Only the Brave is good. Tron Legacy. Yeah, a lot of good stuff. So yeah, it's coming out August 6, 2027, and casting is still underway. Production is scheduled to begin next year. I haven't seen Michael Mann's Miami Vice movie. I haven't seen the show or anything, so I'm excited to kind of dive into that world once we get there in 2 years, whenever it is. But yeah, still excited for that movie.
I think I haven't seen Miami Vice the show. I have seen the first half of the Miami Vice Michael Mann film. I saw the first half of the extended cut, and I just didn't keep my attention on that movie, so I didn't finish it out. But it was fine enough. I think everyone's like familiar with the vibe of like the 80s Miami Vice and like the coloring and like the Miami Heat, like Vice.
Oh,
jerseys are
Vice
some,
unis are insane.
They're some of my favorite sports uniforms of all time.
I want a Dwayne Wade Miami Vice jersey.
That is
so
a
bad.
Hot commodity. That'd be sick. Favorite player, favorite team, awesome jersey. So cool. I'm excited for Miami Vice. Anything Joseph Kaczynski's going to do next, I'm first in line for, just based off of his current track record. Also, I really like Tron Legacy, which I think is maybe looked at as being his lesser of his filmography. That or Oblivion, which is so good.
Oblivion's great.
Oblivion's fantastic. But I'm excited for that. Again, another 2027 release, so I have a long time to be excited for this next film. In other news, we have Paul Walter Hauser joining Zach Cregger's Resident Evil reboot. Paul Walter Hauser will be joining Austin Abrams, who is maybe the standout from Weapons for me this past summer. Paul Walter Hauser will be joining Austin Abrams in this new rendition of Resident Evil for Sony Pictures. The film is based, obviously, on the popular video game franchise and will be set to hit theaters in September of 2026. So, hey, not that long in time for us to have to sit and wait for this new film. Cregger will be directing and co-writing the script with Shay Hatton, and plot details have still remained under wraps, but this will be the next Zach Cregger project, and we have a pretty good cast coming together with these two potential leads, with Austin Abrams and Paul Walter Hauser, so I'm excited. Paul Walter Hauser, put him in fucking everything. I know the studios are trying to, so why not?
I have not seen any Resident Evil movies, so...
I haven't either.
Again, that's one that I'm going to watch through before this movie comes out, which I'm excited for, because I've heard some of them are actually pretty good. Last little bit of movie news that we have is one from our childhood, Camp Rock. The Disney movies Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2 The Final Jam. What was it, like 2008, 2010, somewhere in that range. Demi Lovato, the Jonas Brothers, whatever. Camp Rock 3 got announced, you know? Jonas Brothers are returning in the movie. I think Demi Lovato is a producer. I don't know if she's coming back. She's got to come back in some extent, feel like.
These movies are the reason why I had a crush on Demi Lovato for like maybe 5 years of my life as a kid.
You know what? The songs in Camp Rock are not that bad.
The movie itself is cringy as fuck. The edits of them like showing Camp Rock. Pop, pop.
Yeah, shit's wild.
It's so bad, especially looking like it doesn't hold. Like High School Musical at times holds up really well. Camp Rock, looking back at it now, I'm like, that doesn't really hold up. But the music is pretty decent.
It's pretty solid. What is the Jonas Brothers, like Connect 3 or something? That's their group name in there. I feel like I remember. I don't know. Like I feel like for us growing up as kids, like these were on Disney Channel all the time. We watched these movies so much. This movie's probably going to be dog shit and not capture that magic, but. It could be fun still. I don't know.
I don't know if it's been announced or if you know this or if it's something I missed. Do we know if this is going straight to streaming or is this going to be
theatrical? I don't think they said yet.
I'm like with Freakier Friday going to theaters, I'm like, maybe this will go to theaters. Yeah. But also like the High School Musical stuff has all been straight to streaming since Disney Plus has become a thing. So I'm like, where is this going to land? And I think that will affect my expectations and anticipation for this film. But fuck it, I hope Demi Lovato's back. You gotta bring her back, because I still sneaky have a crush on her to this day anyway. So
she looks good now.
She looks great.
She looks healthy. She looks fine.
Also, like, the Jonas Brothers are still, like, it's amazing how they're still relevant. Not that they're bad, it's just, like, I didn't anticipate them still being around and, like, having some bangers in the past couple of years. So weird news, interesting news, kind of out of left field, but I'm intrigued enough to go potentially see it. I'm excited to see what a trailer like this looks like, but also we probably won't get this for another 2 years anyways, too. So who knows? We'll have a long time to think about it and get excited for it. But anyways, Vikings are playing. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Slate Night, the Film Fan Podcast. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok for more in-depth movie reviews and movie news. And don't forget to subscribe. In the world of film, it's not just about what's on screen. It's also about who's next to you in the theater.
From Mason and I at Slate Night, that's a wrap.